Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
In 1919, he hit 29 home runs and was sold to the New York Yankees.
A three-run home run for Buffington. The Yankees now lead it by a score of 3-2.
Bill Lee is now going over to a couple of the Yankees, and there they go again.
Hits it to deep left. That might send the Yankees to the World Series.
Varitek and A-Rod going at it. Roberts is going. Posada's throw. Roberts, safe.
What can I say? Just dip my heart and call the Yankees my daddies.
Welcome to Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports, episode 216. And the bottom line is we're recording on a Friday morning and we're going into a weekend where we have Yankees Red Sox in mid-September and it actually freaking matters.
Yeah.
My daughter's going on Sunday.
That's going to be a great matchup.
Oh, it's just, I mean, so what we're going to do for you today, the agenda for today's show, we're going to break down the weekend matchup, you know, and again, we talked about Sunday with Crochet's going against Warren, and it should be an interesting weekend. The Red Sox line they're pitching up with that day off in the previous series, so we'll see how it goes. Then we'll talk a little bit about Paul Skeens and John's experience at Camden Yards this past week, but clearly, I'm just happy that the Red Sox are playing games that mean something. That's A. And B, you know, you can say what you want about the rivalry. I really don't think it's been I think what's interesting about the rivalry this year is that the Yankees have gotten shellacked by the Sox, which is not consistent with the Sox season. But to have a relevant series between these two teams in September is really, really nice.
It's very nice. Like I had said a bunch of times, it's great for baseball. It's great for the rivalry. The Yankees, last time the Red Sox and Yankees played, obviously I was at Yankee Stadium, and the Yankees obviously have not played well against the Red Sox. So this is a statement series for the Yankees, especially coming off of a bad series, I'll say, against Detroit. I mean,
well, it finished well.
It finished well, but they, you know, to take 2 out of 3 from Toronto and 2 out of 3 from Houston, and then to go into that, we'll say the momentum isn't great. But right, the Yankees need to make a statement here because the Red Sox have owned them this series and this season. I mean, so to make a statement going out and not seeing the Red Sox again, probably obviously until the playoffs, would be big for the Yankees. But they have a lot of work to do, Brian. I mean, we all know that the bullpen is just going to be bullpenning. I guess it's crazy.
So you have Giolito against Heel, Bayo against Fried, and then Crochet against Warren. I think that Giolito is so interesting to me because he can be horrible. You know what I mean? So I don't really know. I don't trust him. I'm not a big, it's not that I'm not a fan. I mean, but his record doesn't indicate how shaky he can sometimes be. I think Bayo, I like him. I mean, I think that he has the chance. I mean, that matchup to me, I know we have Crochet on Sunday, but I think the Saturday game is the marquee pitching matchup. I really do. And the implications here are broad because if one of the teams losing 2 out of 3 isn't a killer, getting swept could be a killer. Because if you get swept, you could probably be on the fringe of that. You could be in that third wild card spot.
Or on the fringe of dropping
with
out.
Someone on your heels within a game or half a game. So yeah. You absolutely, to me, honestly, like the lowest expectations is the Red Sox have to. Like if the Red Sox win on Friday night, I breathe. Because I think everything else is kind of gravy because you're not going to get really
swept.
Yeah, and you can't get.
And
neither
that's why
team
it's so
swept.
Important because that's the same thing for both teams. And that's when was the last time we've seen that? This late, and it's great. And you talk about the matchups, right? And I'm going to have to eat crow here, Brian. I ragged on you big time when the Red Sox went out and got Giolito. I mean, I can find the text on our string. I was like, there's your season savior. Well, right. Joke's on me, right? Because he's opening this series and at a 10-3 record, Like you said, not necessarily his overall record, but he is one of the main reasons why the Red Sox are where they are. And the Red Sox are lining up their three main pitchers who you will see most likely in the first round of the wild card. If, you know, depending on who wins the two or three seed that gets home field advantage. But that's important for the Red Sox because this is a statement for them too, because this is who you're going to see. These are their guys.
Yeah. And, you know, what I wanted to ask you, I did sports because Matt Stroys, our producer, was on jury duty. And I saw that Volpe had a second cortisone shot. He's got a labrum issue in his left shoulder. And it's Caballero. Could Volpe be done?
I would think that Volpe's done at least for most of the regular season, I would think. Let's be honest, Volpe is not the player everyone expected.
Well, he's batting 206.
He's gone backwards in his progression as a Yankee. Now, that being said, I had said it a long time ago. I said it when he got hurt. I can find that on our text string because he has been hurt for a while. Now, shame on the Yankees for not fixing that earlier and just sticking with him. They knew he was hurt. He got an injection at the All-Star break and another one just recently. So why do you keep parading someone out there and letting him fail on that stage? Right. Now, you might not have had options, but you knew the All-Star break, Hedy was hurt, and you knew you had the trade deadline that you could have fixed that.
Seems kind of cruel.
It's cruel and it's stupid. Like, fix the freaking problem, dude. Yeah. It wasn't just hitting. It was the fielding.
Well, that's my point is that if the guy sucks at bat and if he sucks in the field, then whoever's at AAA is not going to be worse.
That's what I said. I was like, why not bring up Andrew Velasquez? He's playing in three positions down there. He's made six errors all season in three positions. He's going to put the glove on the ball and make the throw. And if you know the guy's hurt, what are you doing?
So then this is what we don't do enough in sports and analysis. Then tell me, what is the team thinking by not doing that? Like, is it because the player says he wants to play and they're siding with him? Because, you know, Boone is a player guy. Like, he wants to let him play through crap. But, like, tell me what you think the team's logic is in not doing that.
Honestly, I don't know what the team's logic is. I think you made the perfect point right there. It comes down to what the player is telling you. But regardless of what the player is telling you, the stats are telling you something totally different.
Yeah.
And you are in a position as the New York Yankees when you have struggled immensely since June, and that's not too far off from his injury. Not to say that Anthony Volpe was going to be your savior, but when your shortstop is leading the league in errors and is clearly not playing well, why aren't you fixing that? And it's not a huge fix. I mean, many teams have gone and went out and got a guy like Jose Iglesias. You can call them the scrap pile guys or the guys that sit in AAA, or you just go out and make a trade. But what you need is you need to find someone that's going to be healthy.
Yeah. You know, I'm curious. I mean, the Yankees got back to hitting home runs. I mean, I want to get your perspective on Aaron Judge, who now, as of Friday, is tied with
Joe DiMaggio.
He's behind Gehrig, Mantle, and Ruth. I don't think he'll stay healthy long enough to catch Ruth. I think he'll catch Gehrig, and I think Mantle's 50-50. Right. I mean, I actually have the numbers. I don't know if I got.
Yeah, well, the funny thing about, you know, Aaron Judge is my son and I had looked, you know, kind of did the math on him. He's in his career, he's missed about one full season due to injury. So you tack on about, I would say, 45 to 50 home runs, and then you could see where he would be in the all time list. But you can't talk about what have, could have, and should have. What's interesting about, you know, what Aaron Judge did on September 11th was hit two home runs on a big stage, right?
And yeah, the president was there, anniversary of 9/11.
It was a big deal. And that's, you know, in sports, that's important, right? It's important for the nation. It's important for the team, and it's important in general. That could swing the momentum of a team. But the Yankees, as they play now, have seven guys that are hitting over 20 home runs, and then Anthony Volpe sits there at 19, and we had just talked about that, that he probably won't maybe get that next home run. But you brought up the Yankees are hitting home runs again, and everyone says that the Yankees are, you know, a feast or famine team, all home runs. And I looked this up earlier. The Yankees have scored like 761 runs this season, and they lead MLB in that category. Could you guess how many of those runs were scored via home run, Brian?
So it's 761, and then so that's 150, 200. I would say 350.
Wow, that's really good. 384. It might have swung a little bit last night, maybe under 390, but just about half or a little bit over half. So the Yankees are a 50-50 team. But
I wonder what that is relative to other teams, though, because I don't have a comparison.
But I thought that was interesting because you would think. Most would say that it would be a little bit higher because the Yankees score so much with the home runs.
Right.
But I think it speaks to the fact that when the Yankees need to score or manufacture those crucial runs and people are watching, they're just not doing it. They're scoring them at BS times, I guess is what I'm saying.
Right. So just for the numbers, for people listening, if you're interested, DiMaggio is at 361 as of Friday. That's where Judge is. Gehrig's at 493. Mantle's at 536. And the Babe is at 659. And
so like 130 home runs to catch Gehrig.
Which, I mean, what is he, like 31?
Judge is 32. Yeah. He's going to be 33. He signed basically through his career through the Yankees, I think, six more seasons after this. He'll do it as long as he stays healthy.
So say he six seasons.
I mean, if he hits 30 home runs every season, he's got 180, right? He should hit 40, and you probably get hurt a little bit here and there.
Yeah, so I stand by it. I think he'll get Gehrig. I think it's 50-50 to get Mantle, and I do not think he'll touch Babe Ruth. And the truth is I don't want him to. I like when the Babe has that record because I think the steroid era and all that other crap with the home runs skewed things so ridiculously. I think that Aaron Judge is a freak of nature. I tend to think he is clean, and so I tend to respect everything he does.
Yeah, I mean, if he was dirty, he would have been pinched by now. I mean, I think Major League Baseball's made that quite clear. You can't really circumvent this stuff anymore.
He's John Senecal. I'm Brian Shackman. This is episode 216 of Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. Okay, prediction time. 3-game set.
I would love to see the Yankees sweep, obviously.
I didn't ask what you wanted.
All right,
I'm
going to say 2 of 3. Luis Gil finds his groove, and the Yankees win the opener, and the Yankees take the second game, and they lose the third game, unfortunately. But, I mean, Garrett Crochet and Max Fried, honestly, I think these are the two biggest starts of their season. I mean, because they not only are they pitching in a huge game, but they're pitching for possible a chance at the Cy Young Award.
I think that Crochet, yeah, he's very intense. I think he can get himself too amped. And I think I've seen that. He had a bad start last week, I think.
We also got to remember, he's up there on his innings limits. This was a guy that came to the Red Sox on an innings limits where the White Sox wouldn't extend him out. So I'm not to say that that's a thing, but hey, listen, seasons are long and little things add up.
Well, let's take a look at that because he is 39 innings above his career high, right? So his career high was last year 146. He's already at 185.
Yeah, that's like five
or six starts.
And
before last year, I mean, he'd only had cups of coffee. So last year was like his first real full kind of season. And that's a lot of extra innings.
It's a lot to watch, especially when, assuming the Red Sox make the playoff, he is going to be your guy. He's going to be your guy, and he's going to be your guy down the stretch. And he has to be, right? He is. Yeah. He's what you signed him for.
Maybe you do a couple of five. If they had a good weekend here, maybe you 5-day him or something. I don't know what to do to give him some rest.
Well, I think when you see where over the next week, you will definitely, I think, see how it's going to shake out, given the fact that based on the Yankees and Red Sox outgoing schedule. So the Red Sox might have an opportunity to rest him.
I agree. I think the Yankees win 2 of 3. I do. I just think that I don't know why. That's my sense of things. I would love it if they swept him, only in the sense, not because I hate the Yankees, which I don't like the Yankees, but I think it would just be such great drama. It would be just great drama if the Yankees had to claw their way in the last 2 weeks of the season.
To stay in the playoffs.
Yeah, it just would be. Because you know what? If something bad happens to the Red Sox, you could be hugely disappointed. But I think in general, if you roll back the tape to what I said at the beginning of the season, I said if they win 83 games, I would have been relatively happy. Now, this team has put me through the ringer because the way they lose is so frustrating and demoralizing.
Yeah.
That I feel like I've been up and down with these.
Well, they're
these
not
guys.
The Mets as of lately, so you got that going
no,
for
you. No, that is definitely true. Listen, before we go, we want to talk quickly. Listen, you love baseball, you love the Yankees, but you had the opportunity, and I've been to Camden Yards twice, and I was there in '94 when it was a pretty new park, and it is a place to love, and I do love it there. I took my children there once too, and it was so much fun to take my family to it. And so you saw Skeens pitch against the Orioles. Just talk about it.
Yeah, so I was in Washington, D.C. for work, and I saw that he was pitching, so I grabbed a single ticket, which is a good thing if you're by yourself. It's easier to get closer seats and cheaper, so I grabbed one.
What was the crowd like?
Very thin.
Like 25?
Tops, if that. I would say maybe. I mean, I could look at the numbers, but if it was 25, they're faking some of that. It wasn't a lot there. It was a Tuesday, Wednesday night.
Yeah.
And I had like eighth row above the first base dugout. So I had a great view of what was going on. Obviously, I went there to see Paul Skeens because he is the best pitcher in baseball, right? And it's an opportunity to say you saw one of the best. And if he keeps going on his trajectory, he could be one of the best ever, right? And he lived up to the billing, right? I knew going in he wasn't going to throw more than six innings because that's his MO. That's what they're keeping him at. But I wanted to see what he was all about up close. And I'm telling you, man, you cannot find a flaw in the guy. Everything he does is a repeat, a rinse, and a repeat. Everything is exactly the same. You can't see any difference in his motion. Everything is so calculated. And every pitch he throws is within 2 or 3 inches of the plate. You don't see the guy put balls in the dirt. You don't see the guy throw high pitches.
Should he, though? Like, no. I mean, my point is, like, when you're 0-2 and you want to waste one or you want to keep it, I mean, is he that good?
I think what his strength is I think the hitters know that he can put the ball wherever he wants to. And that's what, at any time he wants to. And I think that's what makes him dangerous. Right, and that's what the good pitchers are. You see so many of these power pitchers, and they don't know where the ball is going, and what does that lead to? Walks, right? And what does walks lead to? Runs. Paul Skene doesn't walk anybody, and he's playing on a terrible team. Can you imagine if Paul Skene was on one of the teams we've been talking about, just the two of our teams? What his record would look like? I mean, you would definitely be talking about a 20-game winner this year in baseball, that's for sure.
Well, as of Friday, he's 10-9, but with a 1.92 ERA, a whip under one and 203 strikeouts. What's fascinating to me is you made me look at it. You know, he's only pitched over 100 once since the end of June. And he did it like at least a half a dozen times early in the season. So I think they're dialing him back.
I mean, pitching speed-wise, 100 miles.
No. I'm talking pitches.
Oh, 100 pitches. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But no, but he was consistently, like, he pitched over 100 pitches, you know, three times in April. He did it three times in May and then once in June. And then since June 19th, he's only over 100 pitches once.
Yeah.
So they clearly are and, you know, he unless he's humming, you know, they don't let him pitch through six.
Yeah, and I believe he had 8 Ks that night. And it was funny. I was leaving, like, literally right when he came out, I was like, I'm gone. So I got to drive back to Connecticut to come home.
So you went home that night?
I went home that night. Jeez. I drove back. But it was smart. I got out and I beat traffic.
You came on the next morning.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I did the September 11 talk. But it was funny. I was leaving and I was in the bathroom and I'm listening to these two guys in the stalls talking about the bets they placed on the game and that the strikeouts were 8 on him. And they're like, oh man, he should have had more. You know, it's Paul Skene. And I was like, I looked over, I'm like, you guys do realize the dude hasn't pitched over 6 innings in like 3 months.
You dumbasses.
And he's like, they're looking at me like, and I'm like, clearly, I wanted to be like, clearly you guys don't follow baseball. You just like pissing money away on the bet apps. But one quick thing about Camden Yards. So I've been there a bunch of times. I think the last time I was there was 2 years ago. And I've sat all over the place. Bobby Dickerson played there, was a coach there. He's given us different seats. But I've never actually sat down in the box seats. I'm always up on like the medium level where they put the players, people and all that, or up in the upper deck. And I was taken back by how tight the seats were and how like crunched in you are for that close of access in that size park and how long it's been there and no modifications, right?
Right. They haven't touched it.
And you know, and they put cup holders in too. So it really, I mean, I'm a
you're
taller.
You're 6'2"?
Yeah. I'm a taller guy with longer legs, but I was looking left and I was looking right and there was a girl sitting next to me and she was crunched and she wasn't that big. I mean, you had to be a kid or like really small to be fitting in those seats. And the other thing I was struck by, and I didn't remember this the last time I was there, was a couple years ago. Every time, like, I went, I got two different things to eat and then also listening to the ushers going up and down.
What'd you get to eat?
Oh, nothing special, dude. Literally, like a pretzel and a soda. I had already ate coming in. I just want a snack. But every stop, when you make a transaction, they say to you, they either say, there's a spot there for a tip, and they give you the two options, 15 or 20, right? And they basically shame you into do it. But then at other places when
they
you go
They say
up,
it to you?
Oh, yeah, right to you. And it's almost like they're like putting you on a public display, you know? And then at the other places up at the actual like kiosk where you went, some of them said, I'm a volunteer. I just volunteer here. And we appreciate tips. Now, I can't imagine that the team would let people get away with saying that. So I'm going to have to take them for their word that they're volunteers. So the second part of that would be shame on the Baltimore Orioles, right? If you're not paying these people to come here and hawk products for you and they're just there as volunteers, that's ridiculous. You got a multi-million-dollar. We don't even need to get into that. Fix that, right? Figure that out. But if it is, it's kind of a ruse. And again, that's just kind of how society's become. You're getting shamed at every level to donate. So.
I really, you know, and the thing is that what I dislike about it the most, I'm a ridiculously generous tipper and I'm a generous human being. But I am offended by that. And, you know, and a lot of people, you're paying $17 for a beer. And some people say, well, what's another dollar? You know, and all that kind of stuff. And listen, I also understand that since we've become more cashless, they don't get tips the way they used to. Because if a beer was $8.95, you would leave the buck 05 off your tent.
But at the same time, it's also very easy to get people to just to say yes to something when they don't have the physical stuff to give you.
Yeah, totally.
So there's two roads down that.
It bothers me too. And what bothers me about it is that and this is a conversation everybody's had. We're not breaking new ground on it, but you know, stuff that we just always assumed was a core service, you know, like, and then now we got a tip for everything. So like that bums me out that they put you in that position. So the nostalgia of it's worn off on you a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is. I mean, I've been there enough to see the park, so I was just in and out. But that was the first time I was kind of like, you know, this experience isn't what I thought it would be, especially like the seat. Given the seat, you would think that there would be a little bit more comfort involved.
I've told this story before, and you may or may not remember it, and I won't give the whole story, but I'll sum it up the reason why I love Hampton Yards, besides the fact you can drive down there and see the Red Sox for like the same price as going to Fenway, and it includes your hotel room, and they let you in for batting practice and all that stuff. But when I was, you know, I don't know if you had this at Siena, but there's a week between the Anna classes and graduation and senior week, and people would go somewhere. And so we had a big group of people who went to Myrtle Beach, and we just got a motel and whatever.
Yeah.
And we were coming back, and we did we called it a cannonball run. Somebody stole a bunch of mini golf flags, and the first one to campus had planted the flag in the hill won the cannonball run.
Yeah.
And it was stupid. But we were doing well. We were like pissing in Gatorade bottles and just flying. And then one of us was like, and this is pre-internet or whatever, we just knew whether it was from a newspaper that the Red Sox were in Baltimore.
Yeah.
And I think it might have been, I don't know if it was Aaron Seeley, but I don't know if it was Ben McDonald, but it was Aaron Seeley was pitching. And we were like, screw the cannonball run. Let's see if we can get tickets. And what ended up happening is, and the guy in the Globe had written this, and it's different today, had written about how he never bought a ticket to a game. He always scalped it, but he never scalped from scalpers. And his theory was that you'll always find somebody. This is in 94, mind you. This is not today. His theory was that you'd always find someone with a story who couldn't go. And he said his success rate, his hit rate was like 90%.
Yeah.
And so we were just, the game was like sold out. And so we were just like, what do we do? We didn't have a lot of money. We couldn't buy whatever. And so we were sort of wondering what to do. And we'd been there for like 20 minutes and the game was about to start. And some guy comes up to me and he's like, listen, what are you?
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
What are you guys doing? It's like, well, we're trying to get tickets to the game. He's like, listen, I got 3 tickets. My kid's sick. I can't take them. I'll give them to you for 25, whatever it was. It wasn't even face value, except we had 4 people.
Yeah.
And so we took the 3 tickets and we're like told the other guy, you know, just whatever. We did like, you know, rock, paper, scissors or whatever. Somebody got screwed.
Yep.
And they had to buy some general admission. Turns out the seats were down at the bottom. We're lower level. And like Pam Shriver was there with Senator George Mitchell. Like we were and we were hungover and dirty. And like we were all in these, like we hadn't washed in like days, but we were like 15 rows from the field. And I don't remember how it felt with my knees and in the seats. And I just remember it was just the coolest thing ever. Cause Camden was pretty new. And it was just so like, Camden always has a special place in my heart because of that
story.
We got
to do an episode in the off season of just about our stories of going to ballparks because, you know, as a baseball fan, those are some of your best memories. But whether it's with your friends or by yourself or with your father or your brother or whoever it is, there's some awesome memories at baseball stadiums.
We should absolutely do that because I have a couple that I've never told anybody and that if my father heard one of them, he would freaking.
Oh, I got a couple of good ones too. I could share. Yep.
So I look forward to that because I not to call my own number. We've had some epic moments at the stadium, and you've been to probably 2 or 3x the amount of games that I have. Listen, it's going to be a fun weekend. Are you going to be nestled in and watching all three? Or?
I got a lot of family commitments this weekend, so I'm going to have to be following on the interwebs most of it. Sunday I will be definitely watching, but Friday tonight and Friday and Saturday games are going to be a little rough.
I hope everything goes okay at home.
Yeah.
Thank you, John. He's John Senecal. I'm Brian Shackman. You've been listening to episode 216 of Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.